and friends. I'm Val.
I'm Courtney.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is My Perfect Romance.
Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
What about all of you?
Or how about my sweet love?
I think we all have a different idea about what romance is.
Well, what is the perfect romance?
Gosh, I don't know, but let's find out.
I'm really excited today. Yeah. We are reviewing the book, The Vegetarian.
And we have a special guest with us.
Yes, this is. So, yes, my mother, Susan, is here with us today, and she's the one that recommended it. It's not necessarily a romance novel.
It is not, but what I will say, it is probably the most erotic book I have ever read.
It is.
I don't know if you felt that way about it.
I think it was erotic because flowers are erotic.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The imagery in this the is very erotic.
The sensory details and the imagery and the prose was
beautiful. And there is very so well much to chew on in this book. I mean, it's a relatively quick read. It's 5.5-6 hours, I want to say.
Five.
When you listen to it.
Yeah, when you listen to it. And
it's written by Han Kong, and I guess she is a Nobel winning novelist.
She should be.
For some other books.
It is not so beautiful. This one,
she won the 2016 Man Booker International Prize, which is
a big deal.
Yeah.
Man Booker
It is so well written. And I didn't even know that, but
she is from, and I think she is from South Korea.
Yeah, she is.
And so that's where this book is centered around this, that.
Well, and it informs.
And I want to be.
What happens in the book where she's from.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
exactly.
I wish I was more educated because, after reading this, I want to go get some more information about South Korean culture. And then I want to reread it again because there's so much going on in this book and so much of it you don't understand is going on with mental health and with a lot of things.
Do you remember when Gangnam Style came out?
Yes.
Do you remember? That was 14? It's been a while. It was such a hit. It was such a big deal. And I was like, where's this coming from? Yeah. And I think that sparked a little bit of curiosity in me about South Korea because I still to this day don't know a lot other than K-pop and amazing skincare routines.
This is true.
And I was listening to another, I can't tell you the name of the podcast, but they were talking about world beauty standards that are, cultural. And that was a big deal. I will say that there are more plastic surgeries in South Korea than anywhere in the world.
Well, they do the eyelids.
It's a matter of life and death for people. It's a class distinction thing.
Yeah.
It is how you get a job. If you're going against, this many other people, and you, the whole point of that surgery was after, I think, one of the wars.
Yes.
And it was like a humanitarian effort by this plastic surgeon to help them out so they didn't look so suspicious. And so he performed all these free double eyelid surgeries. But then it became now if you don't have that,
then you're suspicious.
You're not desirable. You look suspicious. Yeah. And so that kind of, from there, it just blossomed into this, you have to. If you want to feed your family and get a job.
Jeez. Or be a business owner. If you want to do anything with a public face, you have to.
Wow.
And one of the characters in this book, did have that surgery and she was a shop owner and she was basically kind of the only successful female in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whereas the men didn't have to go get the surgery.
Yeah.
It's just the females.
Right.
So there's a lot of patriarchy that I really feel like I need to, I hate how ignorant I am and I need to understand the culture more. So I'm going to probably make a lot of mistakes during this podcast because of my ignorance. And so I'm just going to put that out there right now. I need to become more educated on this scenario.
I will say that I feel like it's, even though it's based in South Korea, I think there's a lot of places around the world. And there's even little pockets of it, here in this country where patriarchy is the rule.
Yes.
So
yeah.
I think it's a very relatable story.
It is. It's a three-part novel set in modern day, and it's based on Hahn's 1997 short story, The Fruit of My Woman.
Oh.
I haven't read that story, and it would be interesting to see where the book grew from, that short story.
Mm-hmm.
The Yong-hae is the protagonist of the story, but the interesting thing is you really don't hear her except for teensy-weensy little
dreams. I feel like the only time you hear her perspective is through dreams.
Yes, yes.
Otherwise, it's told from the first part from her husband,
uh-huh.
the second part from her brother-in-law, and the third part from her sister.
Yes. And
did you notice, like, as I was getting to the third part when we finally got to the sisters, mm-hmm. I was like, I still don't think I know the protagonist's name.
Yeah, that's so funny.
And I realized, like, the whole time, in the whole first section, her husband only referred to her as my wife.
Exactly. She doesn't have an identity. And then she's
the men only referred to her in how she served them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And same with the brother-in-law, my sister-in-law, even when he was talking to her in a sentence, sister-in-law.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. She didn't have a name until her sister
gave it to her.
Yeah. Like, and her sister's section was the smallest of the three sections.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was the most enlightening.
It was, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was so well done. What?
It was. Do you mind if I ask real fast? So why did you pick this book?
Oh, yeah.
It was, I'm part of a book group, and it was our choice for a book group book. And I can't remember who in our book group chose it, but it was one of those books that we probably talked more about than a lot of them because it's just such a complex and disturbing.
Oh, absolutely.
Look at a person whose history culturally and familially affected her mental health.
Yeah.
And how that played out in her life in such a very sad way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what dynamics can really create in terms of human existence.
Yeah.
Really true.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. I felt like this was just really a deep book. And I like it because the first part is called Vegetarian. So we have the Mr. Chung, I think that's his name.
Mm-hmm.
He's the husband, and it's his perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I just
didn't it start out. My wife was completely unremarkable.
Yes.
Until she became a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Like there was nothing about her.
Yeah,
that
and he loved the fact that she was just she doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, and I love the fact that my wife so doesn't matter that I don't even have to give her a thought. She's just there for my convenience.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I just hated his perspective of her. He made me so mad.
So painful.
He was just,
he
didn't care.
Dismissive,
didn't care until she stopped making his food with meat. And until she stopped.
He was not only dismissive, he was embarrassed. Because of the whole bra situation.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't want to wear a bra, and so her nipples would show through shirts. And but for her, they felt too restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
And he really put her down and chastised her and made her feel like
she was
not worthy of even being a human.
And he had such a way of like not even asking her what's like going on with you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. He just was so annoyed by her all the time and how she wasn't contributing to his making his life easy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
never any concept that this needed to be a two-way relationship at all.
Yep.
Well, and her response, she was set up to not respond to that. I mean, in her history.
Yes.
Her father and her culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be, that kind of abuse would not be allowed by many women because they were not set up culturally.
Yeah.
To just take it on.
And he viewed if it's sheer obstinance for you to go against my wishes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And
for
I,
you to have your own thoughts, wants, or needs.
And I will go to your family, and your family will support me when I complain that you are not bending to my will.
So I think what
I reach out to your family instead of your family supporting you.
Yeah.
They support me.
Yeah. So what kind of triggered it? And the only perspectives you get from her are through her dreams.
Yes.
So initially what happens with her is she has a dream about not eating meat. I can't remember the details of that dream.
Like, it was a dream. It was a violence against animals.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was horrifying.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And she wakes up and
she
starts throwing all the meat that they have in the house out.
You know what this reminded me of? There's a really famous artist named Sue Coe. And if you ever look at her artwork, it is all about abuse of animals. And this book just actually reminded me so vividly of that artist. And if you get a chance to look at her work, I think you see the connection there.
Okay, yeah, we'll put that in our...
How do you spell Sid Coe? Because I'm
Sue.
Sue. Okay.
C-O-E.
Sue Coe. Just a little side note.
Cool.
I think I would love it if you curated an art collection. Just, I would just love to see.
Well,
I have
one in my house.
Oh. She does. I would love, honestly.
My house is floor to ceiling artwork.
I would just, I'm sorry, but your mom with art is a love story. I would love to curate your. I would love.
And I think you're right. She does have a love with art.
Oh, and I love how you talk about it, and I love your views on things. So I just needed to say that.
So that violence against animals is what triggered her throwing out meat. He's initially really upset because it's really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's initially, but then eventually she starts to become more lethargic and have less energy.
Yes.
Which then turns into, well, she's listless when we're having sex.
And then she doesn't want to
have sex with me. And then next thing you know, she's just laying in bed not wanting to have sex, but he still takes advantage of her.
Yes, and that just made me so angry because his point of view is like he would do it even if, you know, she didn't want to. But it wasn't to me. I'm thinking he is raping her.
He is raping her, but
his point of view is, well, I just had to have sex. So I
and
just
she is my matter. Object.
And she's my wife.
She's my yes. She's
I don't
her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And like to the point where it's so normalized that he's all like, it's such a pain in the ass for me that, you know, that she's able to fight me off 2 out of 3 times.
Yes.
But 1 out of 3 times I'm able to get it in and get off. So it's just like, this is just part of my inconvenience that I'm suffering with, that I'm having to deal with this. Poor me. And also, I love how he tells you how absolutely unremarkable she is and how unimportant she is. But we find out that, well, she took away the fact she's a great cook. And she's still a great cook with all the veggie dishes and stuff, but she took away being a great cook for the meat dishes. And so we only hear the slightest hint of a compliment about her. When it's taken away from him, and he's still comparing her to her sister. You know, well, she's a great cook, and she still is a great cook cooking meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then they have that intervention with the family, where he's like, this is unacceptable for you to not bend to my will, and I need to get your family members involved.
It's not even that he was concerned about her welfare.
It was just
that he wanted her to start being like she was. When they got married.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, she was moving away from him.
Mm-hmm. So
his control. Yeah.
He and you get to see a snippet here of maybe her childhood with how they're force feeding, trying to force it down her throat.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad hits her. And it's okay. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with treating her that way.
Yeah.
And trying to control and force her.
And her reaction to that is like one of her most, I feel this is her reaction to the way it's like she snaps.
She
it's
does.
Her reaction yep. to everything that's happened to her in her life. At this point.
And she does.
She mm-hmm. takes a knife and she breaks away from her family, takes a knife off the table and slits her wrists.
Yep. Mm-hmm. She just wants it to be over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's done. Being
She's done.
Abused, basically.
Absolutely. Because mm-hmm. that's her existence, mm-hmm. is to accept abuse. And she's
I
like,
think
why?
That was a great symbol of the change that mm-hmm. she was going through.
And, mm-hmm. And it, you know, as you move forward and you realize this is about mental health, she's actually not crazy for wanting to escape that.
Yeah, no.
But in this situation, we're presented with, oh my gosh, she's so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one, she's the problem, she's the one with yeah. the problem, this is crazy. And, you know, and then you have the good sister who just sucks it up more.
It is interesting because the good sister, like, she's the one that's carrying the weight of the family.
Everything.
But she gets no recognition for that.
Absolutely yeah. zero.
You know, she's yeah. still the wife.
Yes.
She's still the mom. Mm-hmm. She's still the breadwinner. Mm-hmm. But she gets absolutely no appreciation for that either.
No, no. And in fact, the more you give, the more that's expected of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so her role is just even harder because there's never any appreciation and this is where culturally, like I was just like, whoa, I need to understand this more because it sounds like the cultural expectation for women is you have to super exceed to even do anything, but you're even when you super succeed mm-hmm. for your station, your status and your place, there's no reward for you. There's just more expectation of you.
Yeah.
And then your bar now becomes this.
And I think that happens everywhere.
I think it does happen everywhere.
Not just, you know.
In South Korea. Yeah.
I mean, for a while there, it's like, gosh, did we women do a disservice? Like, kind of taking in over the workforce?
It's true.
To some degree.
It's true.
Because I'm like, gosh, sometimes I feel like,
now
I'm taking care of the kids, taking care of the house, taking care of the bills, going to work, juggling everything.
Absolutely. But, and I have higher expectations to stay pretty because that's where my value is. And, you know,
yeah,
all of
trying
that.
To fit all of that in. But then I realize, well, also, I do have support that I need to ask for.
Mm-hmm.
But I hate having to ask. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, the expectation isn't that, like, oh, you're also supposed to help with housework. Like, that's not society's expectation. It
well,
still falls on
the
woman.
Look at the language. Look at the language.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
like if
it's
you're
not
doing
their
housework.
They are helping with the housework, which then says all the responsibility is mm-hmm. the female's. And if the man does some of it,
wow,
it's not
him.
Him doing his, it's not him just being, he's helping.
Mm-hmm.
Men babysit their own kids. Men, you know, it's not, the expectation is all the responsibility is in our language and our culture, even
oh,
in our
it's
culture,
absolutely
is completely
impossible.
Does that. He's helping her with it. And you see it all the time. If a mom is at the park with her kid and she looks down to check her messages to coordinate the doctor's appointment and this, everyone's like, oh, she's a terrible mom. Look at her scrolling on her phone. She's not engaging with her children or something like that. But if a dad takes a kid to the park and he even does anything like, oh, I'm for 1 second pushing the kid on the swing or something like that, isn't he an amazing father?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
the expectations
are
unrealistic.
And the sister, is that. She
mm-hmm.
is the breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She takes care of the child. She's taking care of everyone in her family.
Mm-hmm.
The second part of this book is the Mongolian mark, which is the brother-in-law's.
So the sister's husband.
Yes.
Who is an artist.
So I want to mm-hmm. just sum up. So she slits her wrist. She's put in a mental institution, essentially, for slitting her wrist. And it's all being blamed on her being crazy, not that she's reacting and responding to her environment.
She's calling out for help.
Yes, exactly. And so then the brother-in-law decides to divorce her. Then her husband decides to divorce her.
Mr. Chong, like, divorces.
Because she's not serving me anymore.
Because he's not serving her anymore. And everyone basically says, yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, you poor thing. You have a dysfunctional wife.
Yes, we support you in, you know, you poor man. And he just basically takes off.
Yeah, Mr. Chong's out after that. Yep. You know, he's done. Can't do it anymore. That's too much for him.
So she's now, after that incident, she's living on her own.
Yes.
And with, I think, some support, intermittent support from her sister.
Her sister kind of helps. I think she's getting some,
disability of some sort.
Mental, you know, she's getting some psychiatric help as well.
Yes.
And she seems to be kind of living kind of this quiet life at this point by herself. But the brother-in-law,
and she's still vegetarian. I mean, she's vegetarian, but she's also very thin.
Yes, she's getting very thin. She's but she's eating a little bit, so she's kind of maintaining. But the brother-in-law was the one who wrapped her her cut when she cut herself at the end of the first section.
And whisked her off to the hospital.
He sees a birthmark, a Mongolian birthmark on her that reminds her of a...
So what happens is he sees one on his son.
Okay.
And when the wife is bathing him, he's like, what's that? And she's like, oh, it's a Mongolian birthmark, you know. And he's like, that's kind of weird. I don't know what I think about that. And so she's like, oh, well, you know, they almost always disappear on people. Oh, my sister has one that never faded away. So, you know, this one will probably fade away. Don't even think about it. But, you know, every once in a while they may stay. So there's a small chance this one may stay, like the one that happened on my sister. So then he was fascinated wanting to see it.
Oh, I thought he saw it in the process of taking her to the hospital.
No, he didn't see it. He wanted to see this. He became fixated
But he did become a little bit obsessive about her because of that incident and holding her and like being her hero.
Because he's a nothing person.
Well, and you see that through this, what I was saying before is you see how little he does and how much his wife does.
Well,
and Hai is.
He's so absorbed in his art, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He is. He just barely. Like, he has a small part in their child's life, you know, when she needs him to take care of their child because she's working, he will. But otherwise...
But it's an inconvenience, and he lets her know it.
Oh, he's even comfortable. Well, the kid's asleep. The five-year-old's asleep, so I'm going to just leave the house, you know.
Yeah.
The kid's asleep.
I know.
And you're not going to make it home for another charge. I'm just going to leave the house because I want to go and have more me time.
And, of course, she gets it. She's like, no, you can't just leave the child. I guess I'll come home early. I'll figure it out so that you can do that. Because, no, you cannot leave a five-year-old in bed, you know, alone.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, but – and what he's doing is he's going and making – art. I think he's a video artist.
Yes.
So he puts scenes together and then he videos them and then he displays them. But I don't know that he's a success with his art.
He's not.
That his ability to do this is solely based on the fact that his wife is bringing in income and supporting him and even paying for him to have like a studio.
She not only is the breadwinner, she funds
his business.
His job.
And
she takes care of everyone.
Yeah.
So he starts fascinating about or obsessing
fantasizing.
And fantasizing about painting her body with flowers all over based on that Mongolian mark that she has. And he can't get it out of his mind. So he actually goes and asks her if she would do this for him. And since she is imagining herself as a tree, yeah. I don't know if not we yet. Know this yet.
Not yet.
We don't know. We don't know this, but this
but
is she why
she
says
of
yes.
Plants as just very loving and mm-hmm. kind, and
yes,
she's like,
connected.
I think I would like to be
a flower, a plant.
Yeah. And she sees like.
And the disassociation from mm-hmm. taking herself out of an animal being, I think, is appealing to her because the world hasn't been nice to her. So just removing herself from that yeah. environment yeah. and joining a vegetative state
yeah.
where you're free to, you know, blow in the breeze and you don't have to live in the moment. You can just exist.
Yeah.
No
very
expectations.
Good point, Valerie. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, if you try to imagine yourself being painted, the sensations of that
mm-hmm.
is a pretty, you know, that's a pretty intense.
Well,
yeah.
And the
physical thing.
And that's why this is such a sensual, like Lisa was saying, this is one of the most erotically yeah. sensual books I've ever read. It's because this author is incredible
yeah.
about bringing that to life. And especially because we have a character who has had to disassociate so much in order to deal with the mental abuse, and we don't, you know, we discover this later. She's had to disassociate so much in order to handle her life that someone who has completely disassociated then is that makes her experience of being painted and the sensuality so more intense because she's disassociated for years and years mm-hmm. and years mm-hmm. and then to
this
have
the
this most intense moment and this author is
she's
able
finally alive
to write
yeah.
this into life
mm-hmm.
of the so how she can do that is so central. This is why she's an award you know writer, because you feel that intensity
yeah.
and that sensuality
yeah. mm-hmm.
And how it floods into this void.
Yes.
Yeah.
For both her and we also learn the brother-in-law.
Yeah, it was.
Because he also has had a vacuum of his life too, because he's never been someone who's ever connected in life because he's been so selfish and he's been so spoiled and he's been so contemplated and self-absorbed and been seeking something that was greater. But his problems are of his own making and his own devise and his own self-centeredness. And he's created his mental health nightmare, mm-hmm. whereas the world had created the, you know, the protagonist's nightmare.
Yeah.
But they were both in the same place because of the ends. And so then to be in this voids where they both had this extreme sensual moment, you know, where his was a taking, he was still just taking everything he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, he was very coercive about it. I think from the moment he asked to paint her,
so
his intentions were that he wanted to have sex with her.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
he kind of had somebody else. Oh, he played it off. But, mm-hmm. you
this
know,
was
he.
His vehicle.
Yes, exactly. And
he's just using her.
He was. It was just intense.
Which is so crazy because
and
here you have someone who obviously has so little.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, and that was so attractive to him. How diminished she was.
I remember.
Was
I,
super attractive
she was
to
a
him.
Canvas.
He recalls.
Yes, a blank canvas.
Yes, she was a canvas.
Feeling
and
excited
only,
about. When she got the divorce papers, he got really excited. He just had to have her. But then he couldn't stop thinking about her being force-fed mm-hmm. and, like, being taken advantage of.
Yes.
And that just really got him off.
It did. And then also, I think for him, like, this totally 100% blank canvas
mm-hmm.
who has this
I can dominate
mark, this well of color.
Yeah.
Like, this to him, it became, she's 100% blank. And she was. She was so diminished as a human being. But yet this one human being is so diminished, but they have this one spark, this one spot of color, her vegetarianism,
mm-hmm.
her birthmark. She has this one thing left that she has clinging onto for her identification, and she's a complete, and how can he how can he use that? Yeah, that last bit of her that's left, how can he use it and take it and make it his?
Good point, Valerie. Those are all such good points.
So fucked about up.
The, I think this
the ultimate breaking of the how can I take this one last thing that's left of this person and suck out the rest of it? And in my sense, how can I be so egomaniac that I can say that I'm creating something new and better from it? It's the last absorption of a human soul, and that excited him.
That was the piece of it that brought out his sensuality.
Exactly.
It's just completely horrifying.
That he had become such the ultimate user that, you know, he and his wife still had plenty to give, and so he couldn't take everything from his wife because his wife had become what we saw from our side of it, an inexhaustible source of everything. Mm-hmm. And that was no longer exciting to him to just keep taking freely. He needed to take the last of something. Mm-hmm. And here he had it. I can draw from this birthmark on this blank canvas and suck and pull from that the last remnants of an existence.
And, you know, it was interesting because I think so too. It was interesting that Young Hai's sister, is worried about him because he doesn't come home.
Mm-hmm. And she sees it as mental health too.
Yeah, she comes in to the studio, watches the video, and immediately understands how it's just unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The whole situation.
She sees her sister like this is a mental break.
And she also sees it in her husband too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she does, the most wonderful thing in tries to get them help.
Yes. What a beautiful, here her husband just had an affair with her sister.
Yeah. But she saw it for what it was.
And isn't she not the most beautiful human being ever?
Yeah. Before she even confronts or goes further into the studio, she calls emergency services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she goes in and confronts her husband, and her husband is probably horrified in a sense.
He is a little bit.
Because he kind of sees it a little bit.
Yeah.
And he then goes and tries to jump off.
But he doesn't. He's too selfish. He's he's too much of a chicken shit.
Yeah.
And too selfish. he's like, oh, fuck, this is my opportunity. I need to go fly like the bird right this second. Because he always has his birds in his videos.
Uh-huh.
But he's too much of a pussy ass to actually do it when he could be successful at it. He's just the biggest chicken shit human that's ever existed.
He is.
Even in this. And, you know, he's just a nobody. He doesn't even have the balls to, live boldly.
Because he can't make it over the edge.
No, and he waits, and his thought process is like, okay, if I'm going to be successful, I need to go now. So I'm going to wait just a little bit. I'm going to wait long enough. Oh, okay. Shit, I need to go do it. But he knows he's going to be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that he waited just long enough to be stopped because he's too self-centered.
Mm-hmm.
To actually, you know, he's just a pathetic human.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the sister just realized, God, you are just beyond pathetic.
Yeah.
Like, ew.
And they say, you know, he actually is, a therapist sees him and says he's not mentally ill.
Right.
Yeah, and I think
he's just an asshole.
He's just an asshole. Yeah. But your sister, on the other hand, is. You know, she needs help. But your husband, I don't know why he did what he did, but he's not mentally ill.
And I think part of it is
he saw an opportunity to take.
And in that culture, you know, that sociological, that pathological, he's a fucked up human.
Oh, and then when he calls her later, so they end
but
up
it was
getting
accept-
a divorce.
It was acceptable for him to behave that way.
In their culture.
It was acceptable
for men
her
to take
previous husband to behave that way.
Well, and he raped his wife too.
And that was acceptable.
Because he hadn't had sex with her, and then he was all like, and then we also hear him saying discussed that even when he, you know, for, he's like, she might have been bleeding by the time I was done from him taking her. Mm-hmm. Like, did you guys pick up on that? Like, he just took, he took the sister so hard and so aggressively, disregarding any, he's like, I don't know if she was into it or not. I don't really care. She might have been bleeding by the time we were done. Mm-hmm. I was done with her. But, you know, I'm just so pissed off that even though I tried so hard to get myself off, it just wasn't what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though she's bleeding, I'm just like, ugh. You know, I couldn't even satisfy myself on her. She let me down. What a terrible wife.
Yeah.
And then also, and then he was amazed that, oh, and she didn't even complain the next day. So I guess it was okay.
Well, what would have happened if she had complained?
It's nothing.
Yeah. Probably, this is your place, and I'm going to get reinforcement to tell you where your place is.
I know. He would have gotten off on that.
Mm-hmm.
So she even took away his opportunity to feel like he got to dominate. Mm-hmm. What a bitch.
This leads us to the last part, Flaming Tree, which is Enhai. Young Pai's sister
tells
her perspective of like the aftermath of everything. And she, at this point,
she's in a full kind of break, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is no longer considers herself human.
Yeah.
Yes.
She believes she is a tree.
Yeah.
That can sustain herself on light and water.
Yes.
Yeah, so she's absolutely not eating. And the hospital she is in is not, they can't seem to help her. They can't figure it out either.
And they're, I'm sorry, from a mental health perspective, they're treating her like an anorexic, like this is an eating disorder. Their approach is more, well, this is just an extreme form, you know, kind of anorexia. And I'm like, no dumbasses. Like, I'm like, really? Like, really?
She's never, and throughout this whole book, she's never really treated properly.
No.
Nobody ever
sees her.
Except for her sister.
Yeah. But her sister feels upset because her sister's super insightful, but her sister has been trained to not, her sister to make everything okay and to serve and make everything okay.
She becomes hyper productive.
Yeah.
The sister in order to manage the world.
She's the example of fawning.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take
poster
care
child.
Of everything.
Well, and through Enhai, we see maybe why Young Hai is having this mental breakdown.
Yeah.
She reflects on their youth, and she talks a lot about how her parents and her father treated actually Young Hai.
And the survivor shame. The survivor shame.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons
why. She feels incredibly guilty that she allowed her little sister to be abused.
Yes.
And that she did whatever she could to, like, make her parents happy.
Exactly.
To avoid it herself.
Yes.
When she should have been the one
taking it instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As we were kind of doing some reading about this, they brought up Kafka as a example of, you know, when something is Kafka-esque.
Yeah.
The story of his about the man waking up in the morning and he turned into an insect. And then everyone treated him like an insect because that's how they perceived him.
Mm-hmm.
This is very much where she was in this position of being looked at a certain way. Mm-hmm. And everyone treated her that way.
So then how can you have any self-identity outside of that?
No, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't. Mm-hmm. And it creates in that person a sense of themselves as being worthless and fearful and an object that cannot be looked at in any other way.
Absolutely.
It's just a terrifying.
And then she was just like, and she had no exterior escape from that, so she created an interior escape.
Yeah.
And then what do you feel about the sisters? I feel like the sister feels terrible shame that she didn't protect her little sister. Mm-hmm. But then also I love how the author expresses the sisters' both anger and also jealousy of the little sister's, you know, willingness and ability to forego reality.
Yeah.
Well, what does she say? And this was probably, like, for me, the most, like, insightful line with the sister's perspective. She said about her younger sister, she had never lived, even as a child, as far back as I could remember. She had only endured.
Exactly.
Well, and to some extent, and the sister was subject to the same.
She was. Mm-hmm.
The same treatment.
Mm-hmm.
She, for some reason, came out of it a little differently, but...
Well, she endured the same treatment by being productive.
Yeah.
Yes.
And escaping, like, any kind of, you're not doing enough. You're not doing as I say.
She did the extreme opposite. She was useful, and mm-hmm. because she was useful, she wasn't told she was useless.
But, she still had... it's amazing how two people... And from the same family, and we've seen this in our own families,
mm-hmm.
can have the same upbringing, and yet somehow...
But they had different upbringings, I think.
The father wasn't as...
Yeah, the father didn't...
But still, she watched it.
Oh, absolutely.
And
she experienced the violence still. She was exposed to the violence.
Even though it wasn't on her own body, mm-hmm. she watched it.
It's like kids who watch their moms get beat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, she even says, too, that she may be mentally in a different place if she didn't have a son that was solely reliant on her. She has to keep it together.
Yeah.
She Absolutely. Has to.
And she's jealous. I love how the author writes it. I just love it because she has that. There's the shame that the sister mm-hmm. has over not protecting the other sister.
Yeah.
And there's also the jealousy that you get to escape it. You went and you escaped it all by giving in to the mental fantasy. She's like, do you not think that I also wanted to mm-hmm. give in to the mental escape?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you let yourself do that. And I'm so jealous of you. And I think you're a little weak, but I also think that, you know, how you actually got to give into it. And I don't have that luxury of being able to give into it because I'm the one who has to make it okay for my son and for everyone else. Yeah. You never were given the responsibility to take care of other people. So because you were never given the responsibility to take care of other people, you had the venue and the training to get to escape.
Well,
you
got to choose the position kind of the younger child,
mm-hmm.
you know, that she was the older child and mm-hmm. had to be
responsible
in a different, it was put in a different category.
Yep, exactly.
Early on.
And then did you guys pick up on her things where she was just, I wonder about the sister's mental health capacity because the sister was starting to actually, it felt like some cracks snuck into the sister where maybe after the son is grown up, the sister may allow herself to escape the same way.
Yeah.
Like, I think the sister had never considered the option of escapism.
Mm-hmm.
And she wouldn't do it while her kid was still young. But, like, it became a viable option to the sister. At some point, it may be allowable for her to let herself get away.
There's a question, you know, that's brought up in the book. Why is it such a bad thing to want to die? And
I don't think it is.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that through the whole story. She tries in the very beginning, and she obviously does not want to continue her life.
Well, other people won't let her make that option.
No, they won't. So why?
She has that taken from her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think
over and over again,
if you don't let them have that option, then you don't have to be responsible for the fact that she's done it.
Yeah. I mean, that brings up a crazy, you know, discussion on suicide as well. You know, people around you, but did they, other than her sister, who really cared about her?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, who was?
Nobody.
You know,
nobody even her cared mom, that she was ill. Even, you know, like.
They all, except for Enhai, she is left alone.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The parents, the husband, brother-in-law.
Yeah, the sister, Enhai even pays for the good mental health facility, so the sister's mm-hmm. not in.
And I think,
the,
yeah. I think
the bad places.
Enhai does, in the end, she says, I need to let her go.
Mm-hmm.
She needs to have this.
I agree.
Because she, like, it is work to try and keep her alive.
And she's not
and
happy.
It's, and it's no, going against
and it's,
her.
And it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's a terrible existence.
And in a sense, she was being just as controlling as everyone else
mm-hmm.
by forcing,
yes.
you know, her to be at a place she didn't, you know.
Don't mm-hmm. you love Enhai?
Yeah.
Like, what if, I mean, like, her, like, whoa, just
yeah.
like
I
her.
I think that, I mean, I've seen that a lot when people are getting to the end of their life and
yeah.
they do extreme things to keep the other person alive
yeah.
And sometimes against their will.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just can't say enough about having your own advanced directives, but I will say even that gets blown through.
Mm-hmm.
When you have family screaming in your face about like, nope, you have to take these drastic measures because this is desperate.
We're gonna force life into you.
Yeah,
when
and I just
like,
think
just
I've, and then I've seen and then I've seen the other extreme where people have been respected for their autonomous choices and given a peaceful, you know, way to
exit.
You know, I think how loving and beautiful that is.
You know, I just finished reading a book called The Living Sea of Waking Dreams
yeah.
by Richard Flanagan. And it's about...
Oh, I've heard of him as a writer.
Oh, he's a magnificent writer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about a woman who is older and she's very ill and she's in the hospital and how her children respond to her desire to want to die.
Mm-hmm.
And they just will not let her. It is the most intense book and
mm-hmm.
so sad.
That would be a hard
that
thing.
They can't let go of her and see her suffering.
Because you see that as a form of love too.
Yeah.
Like they don't
yeah.
know how to say goodbye.
Yeah, yeah, well they don't know how they can think about themselves without
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
But then I think a true act of love
yeah.
is thinking
About
how that other person, that's
yeah,
true
yes.
empathy.
Yeah.
And,
it,
you know, is this
yeah.
who they are, what they want?
Do
and
you
can
know
I love and respect them for who they
yeah,
are?
Yeah.
Or do I want to put my needs and my wants ahead of theirs?
I think
yeah.
another thing
like,
that people get in the way of is we're also so judgy about allowing people to determine what is their acceptance for a quality of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so like I, you know, and like we will put personality judgments on it. Like I know my husband and I, we have different viewpoints on this in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like my husband is such a fighter. Like, and I'm a fighter too. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a fighter too. But I'm like, you know, like we talk about, I'm like, for me, just because I know how my brain works, I would go claustrophobic and be insane with, you know, if I had a severed spinal cord at any sea level. Like, you know, I'm like, if it's a total complete, you know, at any sea level, I really, you know, don't want to go forward with that. You know, I mean, now thoracic level, I'm good. I'm like, I can lose my legs, I'm cool, but I want
full
operation
of
my upper extremities.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, whereas my husband, you know, he would be like a Stephen Hawkins and he would not, and he's a very physical man, you know, he's a 4th-degree black belt, but, you know, but he would still want to fight, even at a Stephen Hawking's level of existence. And I'm like, I would go insane in my head at that level. So it's like,
everyone,
you just have different. To, yes. And yeah. So it's like, okay, babe, I will respect, sure. I will respect where you are, but it's not that I'm not a fighter. If I don't want to exist at this place, it's that I know in my head, I would go crazy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would go crazy. And I couldn't, you know, so I will respect what's okay for you, but please don't make me live.
Please let me be who I am too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think that would be really hard for my husband to not feel like, well, and my husband would, he would totally take care of me if I was a C1. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like he would nurture me and he would love me and he's beautiful like that. And I'm like, but I would not love that.
But the thing is, like, then I would say, I'm sorry, husband, you couldn't honor what my wishes are. You will not be my power of attorney. I'm sorry.
But also, you know, like, you cannot let your spouse be your, but you know, like those types of things, it's just sort of
Yeah, but
like,
if I knew someone wasn't going to be able to honor my wishes, yeah. I don't think I would appoint them.
Well, sometimes you don't know really what a person is going to do in response
until
to
you get there.
That end of life situation.
But then my husband also has seen way more than any of us.
Absolutely.
On the good, the bad, and the ugly and the stuff like that. So I think he's also he would be very respectful. Really? I think it would be so hard for him though, because he would want to show his love for me, but I'd be willing, and he would. He would be incredibly beautiful and wonderful that way. But it's like, but I don't want that existence.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's
you know,
tough.
To me, I would feel, you know, and I wouldn't want that existence. And because I wouldn't want that existence, then I wouldn't feel like I would be value added existing that way. And whereas I feel like there still can be value added in someone who has that level, you know, Stephen Hawking is amazing, you know, you know.
So I think to pull it back to the book,
yeah.
We saw those three different perspectives about the protagonist, and you only saw true love at the very end from the sister. So I think it is a love story between the sisters.
I totally do. And full acceptance of someone too, even to the point where she had to forgive herself for her other sister's experience in order to truly respect her sister.
But I want to just say that when you create a culture or a society where one group is trying to domineer another group,
yes.
And it doesn't even matter. It can even be within a relationship between two people. If you have one person trying to dominate another person, there will never be peace. There will never be love. There will only be hate.
Yeah.
Truly, you cannot love someone you're trying to control.
And the sister,
or that you can manipulate and use, like you can't.
I don't even know who the story was about. You know, I don't even remember her name.
She doesn't have one.
I mean, like, yeah.
No, there's no.
She's never given a name.
Nope, she's never.
She's
given
my
a
sister.
Name.
She's the. Yeah, she's
my,
always
the
identified.
The,
wait a second.
Wife.
I think the sister. When I think
oh,
the sister.
No.
At the end,
the sister. She finally learned her name.
When she learns, when she's allowed to be.
And that's what I was saying.
I've been calling her name the whole time.
Yes, you have. But you don't know it until the end.
But you don't know that until the sister basically lets her have her own existence.
And that's love. That's someone who sees you for who you are.
When you're identified.
And not what. Yeah. You are to them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it certainly does take the physical act of love and contrasts it with the...
So insightful.
You know, the actual being...
Loved.
Loved. Mm-hmm. And how different... You know, we paint physical love as such an expression of love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it... also is just a weapon in sometimes.
Yeah.
It is.
That's so insightful.
Yeah. Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Mom, for bringing this book to us.
Yeah, thank you.
It was a different type of read, but I
really
enjoyed
it.
Well, I think
it
is certainly, as you can see, has information in it that requires some thought.
It's a chewy book, man.
Chewy.
Super chewy.
Like, so we typically will rate, like, how, you know, are they going to last? Are they going to, would they ever get together? I don't think we can rate this book on that way. But I will say, if we were going to say it was spicy.
Oh, it was very sensual.
The level of spice was probably a ghost. Like, which I've never rated a book that way.
Yeah, and it's funny because
like, that's a ghost pepper is as hot as it gets.
Yeah.
As hot as it gets.
And what's funny,
what art can do, too.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it's so well written. It's so, this is the most sensual book
I have ever read.
But it's not like, the sexuality in this book, oh, she's such a good writer.
I also have to say, as an artist, for me, there was some component in it that was a comment on art.
It was.
That was, to me, really the abuse of art at times can be so hard as an artist for me to see. You know.
Can you dive a little deeper into that?
Well, the commercial aspect of art and the way it's moving in that direction so much. You know, art can be such an insightful addition to a culture.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's dumbed down to the commercial part of it, it is, to me, painful to see.
How do you feel the brother-in-law? Describe how you see his art. Tell me what you think about his art process. Like, how do you feel about how he utilized her as a canvas, and explain your thoughts.
Well, I thought it was a raping of art, using art as a form of rape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
It absolutely was.
How sad that is to me.
And
that it comes down to that.
Yeah, he was very devious about how he went about doing what he wanted to have, and he used his art.
Yeah. And artists often use that way to dumb down people's minds, to
make unacceptable acceptable,
a complex thing, and to, for people who are not encouraged to be educated around art.
Okay, I'm going to take this another level. Let's talk about religious artistic expressions used. Art is used in religion quite often because it was a vehicle to convey feelings and emotions to people who were illiterate and different things like that too. I mean, is this another vehicle and venue where you've seen things like that? Like, where are places where you've seen art used that way? Like, this man used his art to get what he wanted from his sister-in-law. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me other places where you've seen art?
All you have to do is read every ad in the world.
Okay, that's, you know what, you're right. So, like, the distortion of the female body and how, like, oh, we're going to stretch her legs, we're going to tummy,
clean
we're going to
skin up.
Clean
blah,
the skin
blah,
up,
blah.
We're going to do this, we're going to, oh my gosh, you are so right.
Absolutely.
And that's considered art. And it's the art of airbrushing, and then how
it's the art of manipulation too.
Education to study art for art's sake is becoming something that's not going to happen.
So I don't
it's become commercialized,
that.
Hasn't yeah. it? This
People,
is how you can market
if
and
you
promote
go to
yourself.
University now, a lot of education is geared toward using art to make money.
Exactly.
You're not going to go study art for art's sake because you love the art process and what the language is.
Yeah.
The language of art is being dumbed down to being an object to be able to sell something.
That makes sense.
And that's, we're educating our public to see it that way.
Do you know what? And I'm probably part of that manipulation.
Well, we all are.
Well, but very few people can live without food. And there's like the truth of the starving artist. You know, that's real unless you can find someone to fund your art as he did with his wife.
Yeah.
Well, art is food in a sense. You mm-hmm. know, art is the food of the mind.
Yes.
All the arts are.
Yeah, but if you're going to be able to feed yourself, you've got to be able to sell it too. I don't know. I think the luxury of being able to create art for art's sake is only afforded to few.
And so let's even talk about this with writing. You know, mm-hmm. so a writer
any form of art.
You know, you have to be able to get published. You have to hit certain things. And let's even just talk about music, how music has devolved.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be, you know, now there's formulas for pop songs and it all goes in the formula. You have to hit this things. You need to be within this. You need to get to the peak. You need to repeat it this many times.
Yeah, it's the conundrum of commerciality. Yeah.
You don't listen to the entire album and you don't. And also, like, when people look at music and how it's changed from an evolutionary standpoint, even in just the last 15 years, 20 years, mm-hmm. The dynamics of it. People go through songs so much faster now, too.
Yeah.
You'll
rarely see something longer than 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't know a Bach, you know, anymore, or a Beethoven. There isn't that kind of level of complexity in understanding.
Yeah, you don't get more out of it the 50th time you've heard the song.
No.
You basically, now music is created, pop music in so many things is. And then you get
even
Taylor
the way
Swift
that
too as these beautiful
writing, like, you know, you read a book 100 years ago and they'll spend a lot of time just imagining the imagery. And,
oh my God,
our world has sped up and our attention spans are shorter. Like, to go back and read an older book, it's like, oh, I can't do this.
Yes.
We've been rewired.
We have.
But you know what's amazing about the world? Is that, yes, you can break everything down mm-hmm. and say you can get music hits, art hits, whatever, based on a formula. But you can never predict the one thing
Tell me your thoughts on some of these things, because my daughter has a very artistic mind and she's just like, AI art is sacrilege. And she's like, especially the bots that are trained on artists who they didn't pay for the work to use. She's like, that is just rape. You know, she's just like, I shouldn't use that word. I need to not use that word. So
that's taking advantage of
someone else's hard work. She's like,
without compensation, which is illegal,
which is theft.
It's piracy.
Well, I mean, how does that, for each of us as individuals,
but our laws haven't caught up with technology.
Well, have you guys ever seen, like, I'm seeing a lot of AI little videos and stuff. And for me, I watch it for a second. And then I think, oh, this isn't real.
Yeah,
and I swipe. Because I don't know, there's something in my brain that's like, doesn't connect with the semi-unnatural realness about it.
But you're also more perceptive than most people, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
You have, like, I will notice, like, I'll be like, oh, that's a really cute kind of picture of a house floor plan thing. And I'll go, wait a second, this is AI, because there's no way that you can actually get to that room.
Yeah.
Like, there's like...
Well, is this what we really want as human beings? I mean, don't we want to feel that we can have ourselves these great ideas and these inspired moments?
Oh,
well,
yeah.
You feel like it's a pendulum, though? I mean, we'll get so...
sick of it, maybe? Or?
Well, yeah, you do. Like, everyone will be looking at AI stuff. And then the thing that isn't AI will be attractive.
But you know
and
what?
Then,
like, yeah, I get totally fed up with these things where I'm like, it goes back to the airbrush model. you know, oh my gosh, the outside of this house looks so stinking cute. And look at that. Oh, that's now what I want my house to look like. But then when you start looking at it, you're like, well, there's no way that those dimensions can work for a functional living space. So here I have this image in my head of what now what I desire as what I want my house to look like. But the reality is no functional house can look like that, because that house has been AI'd to be adorable street appeal, but it has no functional aspect to it. Just like a real woman, if you're just looking at the surface, you know, like, oh my gosh, her stretched legs and her oversized head and her this and that is so amazing. But you want to know what? Like, in reality, living with a Barbie doll who has Barbie doll proportions, she's going to have so much osteoporosis. She's going to be, like, super blah, unstable. Like, she's not going to have a functional body that you're going to want to live with, because do you want to live with someone who has those medical problems later on in life? No.
Well, also, I've seen lately, too, women are trying to look the same. So you
well,
have this
dumbing down. As
well, you have this. You
we
have
are.
This idea of what a woman looks like. You like big lips. You know, this idea, and women have the ability now to like put filler in here, facelift here, tongue, whatever it is, to make that face look like everybody else's. But what's going to happen is everyone's going to look the same. So then the one person that looks different is going to be beautiful.
Yes.
So I think it does that swinging thing. Because I saw pictures of, you know, women who we thought were beautiful in the 80s. Yeah. And women who we think are beautiful now. And all the women look the same now. They have no interesting
features.
Well,
I'm worried that we're trying to make people the same on the inside.
It's easier
on the
to control.
Outside. You know,
it's easier to control a very
cohesive large group. Yeah.
Yes. If we can tell you all you have to think the same, you have to behave the same. No, you're being mean if you're doing that. No, you're this. No, this. No, this.
Well,
if we can make it, it's a lot easier for me to control you if you all are the same.
But
if
we're also
widget,
very social.
Yes.
Humans are social. We want to be accepted and we want to be part of
absolutely
a group.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have that second piece of desserts.
It is a conundrum.
Because
constant
I do want to fit into the socially approved image of normal.
Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm part of that. I'm part of that.
Well, we all get sucked
into it. I like being pretty.
It's just...
Well, I think bottom line is, let's love each other for who we are.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the vegetarian was trying to teach us.
Yeah. Yep. And just be aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was right. Really a beautiful. That was one of the most well-written books that I've read.
Yeah. There's a reason why it
got a Man Booker Prize.
Yeah. And I didn't even.
And it is different the way it's written.
Mm-hmm.
Different than most books. You know, it's
structure's a bit different.
Yeah.
Yes, it's told by
I loved
first
that.
Person.
I loved
yes.
that the person it was about, the protagonist. Never
even
told
had
their
a name
story
until the end of the story. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's told by the first person and by the second person in the second and third parts. You know, it just has like all these interesting
mm-hmm.
things about it that
so
kind of are not what a typical book, how a typical book is written. So what I love is that this is a different read,
mm-hmm.
but it makes it lovely and beautiful and
it
interesting.
It has beautiful language.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
it's not the same as any of the other books, so that's why it stands out.
Mm-hmm.
So
the imagery was amazing.
Yeah.
So
I recommend this book to everyone.
Me too.
I think it was
absolutely
a wonderful book.
Yeah,
and you leave it wanting more, and realizing it helps you grow as a human too. Like I said, I read this book and I'm like, whoa. That's so chewy. And I also need to get more information about, you know, Korean culture. I really love the insight into mental health. It was just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even trauma.
And trauma.
Mm-hmm. And the impact that had.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
On an individual and a cultural level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. They took it. And it was only 5 hours.
There was so much. I'm like, oh. It was like with flavor. It wasn't hard. It was so intense, and there's so much in there, but yeah. It was also not hard to listen to or read.
Yeah.
Although at the end, I realized I need to re-listen to the sister's part again, because that was so, there's so much in there. Like, mm-hmm. I need to re-listen to that mm-hmm. part again, because I know I can keep getting more out of this book.
I know I rewound the last 5 minutes. I'm like, whoa.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
It's true. She's like, that was intense.
Even to the last period, you were like,
yeah.
It was very well done. Thank you for sharing
that.
Thank you. And I loved having you with us, Mom. Thank you.
I love being here. It's just watching the three of you was a delight.
We're pretty lucky.
You are.
Yes. Well, thanks you guys for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, come check us out at myperfectromance.com.
Yep. We are all
subscribe, follow, rate, review. Because if you don't follow us, you won't know when new episodes come up.
Exactly.
And you can't spread the word.
And we love your input. Like, we are so open to self-improvement. So, like, let us know your opinions. Like, we can handle it.
Email us for that, though.
Yeah.
Five-star only. Yeah. See, there's that commercial, right?
We're not perfect. Thank you. We're not worthy.
Okay. On that note, have a good day.
Yes, bye.
Bye.